All right, everyone. Exodus chapter 21 tonight. Starting a new chapter in the book of Exodus tonight. And if you haven't read ahead, what I'll read to you may offend you a little bit tonight.
All right.
At first glance, at least. Or may if it doesn't offend you, it might make you feel a little uncomfortable, at least. Until we kind of read through what's going on here and what's being said. As we closed out the Pentateuch, the Ten Commandments, and we saw the reaction of the people, chapter 21, we kind of shift over into what some call the Book of the Covenant, and we start seeing expansion on some of the 10 pillars of the law, as I referenced last week. And we start somewhere that you may not have thought would be the starting point, or more importantly, God starts somewhere different than where you may have thought he would start at. What did the Hebrews just come out of? What did they just spend 430 years not just hanging out in Egypt, right? They weren't, you know, visiting. They were in slavery, right? And so the Book of the Covenant, as it's often referenced, starting in chapter 21, really begins by talking about slavery. And perhaps not in the way you may have originally thought before we jump into it. They'd spent 430 years in bondage and slavery, and that would still be very fresh in their minds. They haven't long since been in that environment. It hasn't been long at all. We're going to see some distinctions here, not just of what they'd experienced in Egypt, but also what the rest of the cultures of the world and how they handled that. So with all that being said, let me seek the Lord's face in prayer, and then we'll jump in. Father, again, we're grateful to come to your house tonight. We're grateful to have this time of fellowship with one another, to enjoy a meal together, and just a fellowship that's joyous to engage in with fellow brothers and sisters in Christ. Lord, we join together in the joys that you give to us, Lord, and I think that only strengthens the bonds that we would have with one another as we may have to walk through sorrows individually in our lives and collectively. So, Lord, we're grateful for community. We're grateful for church family. God, as we open your word tonight, give me the words that would bring honor and glory to you in explaining this text, that we are clear in understanding of what you are saying in the midst of your word. Father, be with us tonight. Be with the little ones next door, Michelle, as she leads them. In Christ's name I pray. Amen. So let's just dive right in. Everybody good with that?
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 21, verse 1. Now these are the judgments which you are to set before them. If you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve for 6 years. But on the seventh, he shall go out as a free man without payment. If he comes alone, he shall go out alone. If he is the husband of a wife, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master gives him a wife and she bears him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall belong to her master, and he shall go out alone. But if the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out as a free man. Then his master shall bring him to God, and he shall bring him to the door or the doorpost. Then his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him permanently. And if a man sells his daughter as a female slave, she is not to go free as the male slaves do. If she is displeasing in the eyes of her master who designated her for himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He does not have authority to sell her to a foreign people because of his treachery to her. And if he designates her for his son, he shall do to her according to the custom of daughters. And if he takes for himself another woman, he may not reduce her food, her clothing, or her conjugal rights. Some translations say marital rights. And if he will not do these three things for her, then she shall go out for nothing without payment of money. And a hush falls across the congregation. Is that hard to hear? Hard to read? Hard to understand? Why does God start off by talking about slavery? And not just any old slavery, but he's specific, isn't he? Did y'all notice the specificity of who he is talking about here? Hebrew to Hebrew. Israelite to Israelite. He doesn't address. The only time he mentions those outside of this family of the Hebrews is what? When he says, you may not sell them off to a foreign person. Does this text make you uncomfortable?
Not at all.
Not at all. I told James I was glad there was a James here, not just all you Jims tonight. Why does it not make you uncomfortable, brother?
Just part of the culture back then.
Okay, part of the culture back then. Okay. Is that acceptable to you?
Well, God approved of it.
Okay, got it.
Acquiesced.
Approved or acquiesced?
Pardon?
Approved or acquiesced. Those are two fancy A words. Oh, one a little more fancy than the other.
I like approved. He put up with it.
Okay.
Actually, it was probably more generous than the culture.
Diane said probably more generous than the culture. But is this Hebrew on Hebrew crime? For lack of a better way to put it.
What was that again? Hebrew?
Hebrew on Hebrew crime? Obviously not. God told him how to handle it. Now, what is the situation? When we get to the next ones, if we get to verse 12 and beyond tonight, y'all are going to be okay with it, I think, for the most part, because then we talk about capital punishment for people who kill somebody. Nobody's going to get too bent out of shape about that, I don't think. You might. We shouldn't.
We could learn from
it. We can learn from it. We shouldn't. Not trying to say we should be looking forward to killing someone. But we understand capital punishment. We understand an eye for an eye. We understand those things better than what God is. And he starts with this. Y'all catch that, right? He just finished the Ten Commandments, and we saw the response of the people. He starts with this. So I just want to kind of gauge everybody's blood pressure before we got started on how you feel about reading this text.
It's kind of like getting a job now. You're bound to that message.
Okay. You hear what Brother Charles said? It's kind of like if you get a job now, today, you're bound to that master. That kind of goes back to a sermon a couple of weeks ago in 1 Peter, right, about being subject to your masters. Okay, so let's walk back.
If you get a job today, you can quit.
You get a job today, you can quit. Okay. Okay.
Pappy has a letter. I think Pappy has it. It was belonged to a will, belonged to his grandmother, his great-grandmother. And in it, she had a slave. And in the event of her death, this man, slave, she named who it was to go to. And when I read that, it jarred me.
Yeah. You think it's probably because of what James said to begin with, the cultural reference and the culture of the day?
It had already been in slavery for 100 years, it wasn't a new thing.
Yeah, and when we think of slavery, especially in this country, and rightfully so, we think of the images and the pictures and what we heard about of the chattel slavery and the abuse of slaves and taking them from this country, their country, I'm sorry. There's a lot to this that we could explore in context of our culture and in their culture. But let's start with their culture and see how far the Lord lets us get. Verse 1, now these are the judgments which you are to set before them. These are, it's a common heading in the Torah in the first five books. What's it doing? It's introducing a whole new block of material. We all can see that, I think, quite clearly. However, there's words attached to this. Most of y'all, I looked at multiple translations. I think nearly all of yours say now at the start of this, right? So there is a connecting point to it. He's connecting it back to what he just said. Some might say and there, but now or and, anything like that, it's connecting it to the 10 pillars of the 10 commandments. You might think, well, he didn't say anything about this in the 10 commandments. Just stay with me here. My translation, I read judgments. Many of your translations may say ordinances right there in that first verse. Laws, ordinances, judgments, etc. So these are going to be based on prescriptive law, general principles. This is set before the people as a law. No one's to be excluded from the knowledge of the law. Why is that important? Thinking in context of many things, but slavery specifically in Egypt, they were under these taskmasters. And if all of us were in slavery in Egypt, although we're all, let's say, for instance, Hebrew, my master may be a ruthless, heartless, beat me every single day, whether I do good or bad. Whereas James' master that he is enslaved to may be a kind, generous, magnanimous type of master. He might love you. Yes, he might. So there's this, and it doesn't matter. There was no law saying you treat them this way, you treat them this way, you treat them this way. God's laying down a law, and he's also having to deal with the fact that man's heart is wicked and rebellious and evil, so he's putting some sorts of brackets on that. There's more to this as we go through this that I want to really share about this. So this is codifying the law. This is saying this is the way God says you're to treat. If you have, I know the word says slave. It's really more what we would define as indentured servitude, but we'll get to that in just a moment also. So is this new? We know it's not new. Egypt had slaves. He had Hebrew slaves, so they understood that. If you go all the way back, like we've talked about before, the Code of Hammurabi, old Babylonian, Mesopotamian codes that predate Hammurabi also, they talk about dealing with slavery too. They talk about a lot of issues in society with laws, crime, trade, marriage, property, slavery, and other things. Many of the same things we'll be dealing with as we walk through some of these over the next chapters in Exodus. There's similarities, but there's very different in the way that God lays this down. This was definitely an advancement over those old laws. There's more of an emphasis in the Mosaic Law on ethical and moral issues. And decidedly, just so much more emphasis on human life and human beings as image bearers of God. We would expect that in God's law. So, verse 2. If you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve for 6 years, but on the seventh he shall go out as a free man without payment. If you shall. If you buy. This isn't a statute that all y'all need to go out and get a Hebrew slave. Okay? But this is if you do. So, this type of slavery we're looking at is really, like I said, indentured servitude. Now, it may have been a while since some of us have been in history classes to understand that, but think about it. I mean, I'm not going to try to polish off the rough edges of this at all. I'm just trying to think of how best to communicate it in a way that makes sense. Indentured servitude is, this is a person who owes a debt that they cannot pay. Perhaps they don't have the skill set to be. Now, we're not there. This hit me on the way down here, y'all, this part. So this is a parenthetical statement based on everything else I'm going to say tonight. This law specifically, and some other ones, when it talks about the land ownership and stuff, they're still in the desert right now. It's going to be a while before these things even really start playing themselves out, but he's giving them to them now. Does that make sense? They don't know it yet. We know, though, that they're about to wander in the desert for 40 more years. They don't know that yet. But that's about to happen too. But in that culture and in those times specifically, there were oftentimes the haves and the have-nots. There's still some haves and have-nots today as well. Yeah. But think about someone who is not going to have anything or that finds themselves in a massive amount of debt to a debtor that there's no way they can pay that debt off. What would they do? Indentured servitude is not a new concept. Pre this time or after this time, they sell what they can sell. The only thing they can sell to pay off the debt is what? Their servitude. Their willingness to work for someone.
Like the position Moses was in. Yeah, when he working for his father-in-law.
When he's working for his father-in-law. Yeah, we see other examples. I'm glad you brought that up, Lori, of a certain patriarch who said he would work for someone to get a certain bride. And then it was spun around on him where he got the other bride and he says, all right, work 7 more years for me. Yeah. There's also a concept here, guys, and we're not going to see it yet because they're going to wander in the desert and God's going to take care of them for 40 more years, even though they wander, right? He's going to make sure they got food, clothing, water. We know that part is coming, right? There's also the aspect in the concept that someone who does not have anything and owes a debt, how else are they going to eat? How else are they going to live? How else are they going to survive unless they say, I will serve you in servitude? Does that make it any easier to swallow? It might not for you. Because our mind is seared with the atrocities that we know happen in slavery.
Yeah, so
that's another very good point, Diane. Did y'all hear what she said? we also, especially as Americans, we value freedom so much and independence so much.
Back in the turn of the century, in the timber industry in Texas, if I didn't have money to support Mary, I could go in debt to a business owner.
Yeah.
He would pay me in what they called back then prosine. And the prosine was only good to buy food and goods from the company store.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
I would have to sign the contract. I would do this for 5 years.
Yep.
Indentured servitude.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not, that happened in different industries and stuff in this country 100 years ago, 150 years ago, commonly, actually. Yeah. There were even some factories, towns set up around factories back during the industrial age that did something very similar to that. They had a factory store, a company store. Everybody lived in this community. You worked for that company, and all the money you got was almost like vouchers, and you could only redeem them at the company store.
Wasn't good for the next county over.
No, weren't good for the factory down the street, or the timber company down the street. It had to be with that timber company. Yep, coal mines too, Brother Charles said, when his dad worked for the coal mines.
So we're pretty much used to it, indentured servitude on our side, not being of the Israeli children that he's speaking of here, but this has been common all over the world.
Yeah, it has been common all over the world. So why are these laws, and why is it laid out like this? To protect those who have to put themselves in that situation.
Yeah.
It's to protect them as best that they can do through the law. And you also notice, I hope you noticed, the one thing, because we could be so blinded and blown away by the first, six words, to not notice, he shall serve you for 6 years, but on the seventh he shall go out as a free man without payment. So what is that telling us? What should that make us think of? The sixth and then the seventh day you go free. The Sabbath. There's a connection back to the Ten Commandments right there, right? The seventh day, the seventh year. And as we'll get further along in the laws of God, the Jubilee year that will come later on as well. So the contract, to use the term we've used and we're familiar with, of 7 years of servitude and set free on that seventh year. Again, it might still leave a bitter taste in your mouth to think about this is the first thing God hits them with because of that thought process. To James and Charles and others' points, maybe if I was teaching on this 100 years ago, 120 years ago in this country, I know it would feel a lot different, for sure.
Well, we did get a half a day off on Sunday.
You did get half a day off on Sunday? All right.
Well, wasn't it? They had just come out of Egypt, so they were all slaves at that point.
Yeah.
So he's laying down rules for them going forward.
He is. That would also, in my mind, I'm glad you brought that up, Jim. Like, they just come out of slavery. They get to that point where they feel like they can't support themselves and they got to depend on someone else, and they will indenture themselves to them. This is a protection for them that, hey, they're not going to treat me the way that they treated my forebears in Egypt. Or they're not supposed to, at least. Right? We're dealing with humans and we know they break the law all the time.
They would need a judge to handle disputes, right?
Yeah.
They ain't got that yet.
No, not yet. Well,
kind of
have that, yeah. They have the elders. Should go out as a free man without payment. Number 3, or verse 3. Here's where it gets even more wrestling in our minds. If he comes alone, means if he sells himself into servitude alone, he shall go out alone. If he is the husband of a wife, then his wife shall go out with him. So if Malia and I decide we're going to go indenture ourselves to someone, and we go in together, we would leave together. I would not leave her behind and vice versa. And that was the law, that we would both leave at the same time. Now, we understand that. We're good with that, I think. Verse 4. If his master gives him a wife, and she bears him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall belong to her master, and he shall go out alone.
That's a little hard to
don't know if I'm going to repeat that or not, Billy.
What did he say?
He's got it made. Yeah.
Did it say he has it made?
That's what Billy, that's what that guy right there said. No, she's not.
Don't listen to this.
Do you need to turn the camera?
I don't. So, if he provides, why might the master provide a wife for this slave to begin with? Especially with this, the way this law is laid out, building it up. But that would mean intended for God to put it out that way. You know what I mean? So, what else? Heirs? If they're born in the household, he hadn't got to any kind of laws like that yet, but I know what you're getting at. If they're born underneath the household of the, could possibly, if he didn't have any offspring of his own, that's a possibility, I guess, yeah.
Apparently
he couldn't go get his own wife. Yeah, he couldn't go get his own wife because he's indentured. So there may be some kindness in the first part of it at least, right? Of providing a spouse for that person, at least in the first part. But when he lets them go and says they can't go with you, that might change. Marty, did you have something? Yeah. Billy's full of it tonight.
Does he say anything here about spousal abuse for Billy?
No, we're not getting into that tonight. So if it was prior to him coming in, then they would release together. Now, there's another law that's not covered here. Leviticus 25, verses 47 through 55, talk about the slave that's set free. I'm going to use Billy's word. This is Billy's words. If she's not ugly and he wants to keep her, he can pay to get them, buy them, purchase them out of it. Leviticus talks about that. It doesn't talk about it right here.
He has money.
If he has any money.
You might want to get back into First Peter on Sunday mornings.
Well,
yeah.
You know what chapter 3 starts. We're not in the easiest text to be teaching on Wednesday nights or Sunday mornings right now, but y'all know my thoughts on that. We're gonna go through it anyway. Actually, I think there's a lot to be gained from this and 1 Peter chapter 3, submissiveness and that kind of thing. So he could purchase him back, because maybe even if he wasn't too keen on his wife, maybe he at least liked his kids, so he wanted to get them. Back. Verse 5. Did y'all catch what Lori said?
Yeah.
It might give him incentive to stay. Verse 5. But if the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out as a free man. That's incentive, as Lori was saying, for him to stay as an indentured servant beyond that year that he could be released. Now, that comes back to the point when I said he could buy them back that's found in Leviticus 25. To Diane's point, well, where's his money come from? Everything he does is going to be for that he who owns that. So it's not like he's got a lot of side businesses going on, right? That would be hard to fulfill that piece. He'd have to stay on. Now, when it said, that's possible, John. That would kind of bring our mind back to the story we found in Genesis as well, with Rachel and Leah. So he could stay with him. He's not forcing him to leave, that he could stay on because he loves his family. Completely voluntary, if the slave truly says. So if he truly loves, does everybody's translation say love his master right there? I was expecting to see different translations not always put love there, but it's there every time. Because the term for love is not this over-sentimentalized, it carries the basic understanding of declaring allegiance to. is really what it means here. That he truly wants to declare his allegiance to not just his master, but his family as well. But he doesn't want to leave them behind. I wish we had some statistics on what that, how many of them didn't do that, but they weren't taking a lot of statistics back then. You got something, James?
Carried on through the Middle Ages, where serfs would declare loyalty to the landlord.
Yeah.
And would fight for the landlord, go to war with him, for him.
Yeah, they still do something very similar to this. In countries that a lot of people think of as industrialized or modernized, like India does something similar to this. Not exactly, but similar to this with their caste system. I haven't studied up on my Indian geopolitics in a while, but I know there's something similar to this that they still do there. In a country that's a nuclear power, I mean, it's how strong of a country they are. I will not go out as a free man. Then his master shall bring him to God. He shall bring him to the door of the doorpost. Then his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him permanently. So what's going on right there? I volunteer to stay. I volunteer to stay. I love my wife. I love my kids. I'll pledge allegiance to the master of the house, the master of the property, what have you.
Does the wife and kids have any choice in this matter?
It doesn't sound like it.
But they don't have to have the ear.
Was somebody saying something, Marty?
It says life without parole.
Life without parole. It's eternal.
Yeah, forever.
It's, yeah.
It's a free choice.
It's perpetuity. He's saying, I will stay here and serve. But he marks his ear. He puts it, his ear. Y'all know, y'all understand what's going on here, right?
Yeah.
Puts his head up against the doorpost, the awl, pulls his ear out and strikes it through with a hammer and awl. What does that signify?
They belong to him.
What's that?
They belong to that man.
They belong to him, but why that?
That I don't get. Please explain.
There were some other people talking there. Somebody else know what's going on there?
I want to show up stuff.
Okay. What's
that?
Well, I guess he'd pull him off of it, but yeah, initially it would. If he wants to get any work done, you got to pull him off the door.
Oh, Lord.
Man, y'all were. Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. This is another thing of these laws he's laying down. We're not quite to the point of them enacting them yet because they still don't have anything. They're still wandering around. This is what's going to happen, though. And actually, if you know the history of the book of Exodus and the Hebrew people, there's not many of these folks that are going to be around at the end of that 40 years anyway.
Nobody over 20.
Yeah.
Except for...
So they weren't even really exercising this one yet. Yeah. They weren't to the part of owning anything yet.
Yep. They're not going to.
There's the word used here, literally, his master shall pierce his ear with a piercing instrument. Huh. It's used, this passage in Deuteronomy 15:17 are the only two places in the Old Testament where these related words are used. Deuteronomy 15:17. Then you shall take an awl and pierce it through his ear into the door. He shall be your servant forever, and also you shall do likewise to your maidservant. So the woman gets it too.
The woman gets it too?
Mm-hmm. Maidservant. Okay. It's carried out on the doorpost. What should that bring their mind back to?
Back to
Passover. Which had just happened. Remember, I know it's taken us a while to get here, but it wasn't that long ago that this had happened. This generation saw that happen. We're active in that. It's a bloody ritual. God always utilizes blood for what?
Covenant.
Establishing a covenant. An oath between the servant and the slave. The servant and the master. Like we said, Deuteronomy, if you thought y'all were getting off on this, ladies, Deuteronomy 15:17 says you get it too. Because of your husband's choice. You're going to stay there anyway, though. Now you get the joy of having your husband stay with you. Yeah. None of the ladies are being nearly as outspoken as Billy was about this stuff.
We'll take care of that.
All right. So verse 7. Now, if you weren't uncomfortable yet, if I've explained this enough to you now, and you're like, okay, I get it, I understand why God's doing this, look with me again at verse 7. And if a man sells his daughter as a female slave, she is not to go free as the male slaves do. Everybody good? Just move on past this one.
This is all indentured.
It's not all indentured. The first piece we're talking about, yes, because they're making the determining factor to do it. Yeah, the context of the original, because I thought about that, the original Hebrew kind of aligns more with indentured. Yeah. But here, that's not the case for sure. So why in the world would a father sell off his daughter like this?
If you're a poor man.
Okay, if you're a poor man, what?
You could sell your daughter. You've got several daughters, you might break even.
Did y'all catch what James said there? James said this. If you've got several daughters, you might be able to break even by selling them off. That was James. James and Billy will be taking
conversations. We have a side study going on.
You got a side study? Okay. So this was a custom throughout Assyria and Babylon. We haven't gotten to all of that yet, but throughout that history, Hebrew parents could sell their daughters into conditional slavery. We're going to see some of those conditions in just a minute. In the Old Testament, the girl is not a slave girl in the usual style that we understand it to mean. She's better protected. She's not to be treated like the other slaves. This is a distinction for her. We're going to see that this presupposes that there's a purpose in this, usually either to marry the master or the master's son. So she'll be either given the status of a daughter or a married woman. So she'll be treated kindly and with respect. Let's go on, verse 8. If she is displeasing in the eyes of her master, who designated her for himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He does not have authority to sell her to a foreign people because of the treachery to her. Y'all see that? He's not selling her off for a role as like a stepdaughter, Cinderella, mop the floors, don't keep your mouth shut. This is for that purpose, into a marital type relationship, to be into that family. We still might be uncomfortable with that. I'll be honest with you, I kind of like the idea of being able to pick my daughter's husbands, though. I'm just saying. Billy's shaking his head. I don't know what that means about me. He might still pick me. We're not sure. That's the part Billy likes. He's talking about dowries now over there. Yeah. It was different then, that's for sure. So, what about this if she's displeasing in the eyes of the master after she's been obtained and yet not married to the family yet? If she's displeasing in the eyes of her master. Somebody's translation says something different than that?
Really?
If she... Exactly. I should just ask Billy to teach tonight. If she's displeasing in the eyes of her... Yeah, I might not have come back, though. If she is displeasing in the eyes of her master, does anybody's translation say something different than displeasing in the eyes of the master? She does not please the master. Okay. Who designated her for himself, though. So this isn't just, I think we think about this and it's almost like he never sees her, but it says that he designated for himself. So there's a designation there. He says, yes, this is a deal that I'm willing to do. So he is saying that, and he takes her in, then decides different. If he no longer decides her, if he simply indicates that the master's view of the woman is not what he wants, maybe he doesn't like her personality so much after he gets her there. I don't know. So what does that mean, though? This has been done. Then he shall let her be redeemed. What does that mean? He's releasing her from that fully and totally, no strings attached.
Would it be written in there or do the 7-year thing?
No, I don't think there has to be 7 years involved. This is something different.
Somebody will own her, though, at some level. I mean, she's not just going to walk off and be your independent.
Well, here's what they can't do. We know what they can't do. Bible tells us what God tells them what they can't do. What they can't do is this. He does not have authority to sell her to a foreign people because of his treachery to her. So the master's the wrong one here. Mm-hmm. That is completely countercultural at that time. It's still countercultural in a lot of places today. But definitely then to say, this woman has done no wrong. I'm going to make y'all real uncomfortable. Perhaps she was a minor when she was sold, being prepared to be married as she got a little bit older. As she got a little bit older, maybe the master's decision, maybe he changed his mind. That could have happened as well. She did no wrong. He's the one that decided he didn't want to be in this anymore. But he can't sell her off to a foreign people. What's that?
That's fair.
That's fair?
It's just because she's part of the family of God that God called to himself. So that would be ungodly if he sold her to a Moab.
Okay. Problems with that? I can see it in some of y'all's eyes. You don't like this very much.
It's like the arranged marriages. You know?
Like arranged marriages, yeah.
I kind of like that.
I kind of admit it.
I'm selling you off.
Man, I don't think it works that way, but okay.
Now, just a minute.
Now, hold on. Here's some more options. Let's keep going. There's some more options here. There's some options. Because redeemed literally means to purchase for a price.
Yeah.
He's redeeming her. So let's keep reading. 9. And if he designates her for his son, he shall do to her according to the custom of daughters. So here's another option. She stays in the family. This transaction's already taken place. She's not the bride for him, but for the son, perhaps. And then how is the master to treat her? Not as like she's somebody else that he can act like she's his wife, but she's not really his wife. No, this is for the son. You're to treat her as a daughter now, not as a wife. So what is God setting up here in all this? He's setting up protection for the women like the world had never seen before. I mean, even Jesus' time, after all the time that passed from here to there, the way that Jesus treated women was completely counterculture as well, right? So she's granted protection if she's designated for the master's son. I think we all get that. What else would that mean? Well, treat as a freeborn woman. Technically, that's what it means. Treat as a freeborn woman. Full citizenship rights. Fully ingrained into the family. Verse 10. If he takes for himself another woman, he may not reduce her food, her clothing, or her conjugal rights or marital rights, some of your translations say. So what does that say? He brings more into the family. She's not to be lessened, degraded, lose any of these benefits that's been afforded to her based on this agreement. You're to take care of her. The master's to take care of her. They would subsequently take other wives often. He can't neglect her. He not to withdraw, diminish, reduce. You'll catch that. Not reduce her food or clothing or her conjugal rights. So reduce her food, pretty easy to understand, right? You got to make sure she stays, you take care of her food, she eats. Her clothing, make sure she's clothed. She's not to be in a corner or treated less than. There is no one under the age of about 40 in here, so. Or her conjugal / marital rights. What's he saying there? She can still have children. Mm-hmm. She can still have the joy of motherhood. And he says not just that she can have, but God is saying don't deny that of her. There's some discussion on that by some people with a lot bigger brains than me, and I think it's pretty clear. This is the only place in Scripture that the Hebrew word used there is used. the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, and other versions try to say it just means cohabitation, living together, but I think it means more than that. I think it means more than that. There is some others recently, pretty recent scholars, that try to say that the third element is actually oil, O-I-L, oil. There's extra-biblical literature that combines the three objects together as various contexts, food, clothing, and oil. It's intriguing, but it doesn't really lack any real support. People always try to think they found something in scriptures that nobody's found for the past several thousand years. I think this is just another... Having children was a tremendous deal, and in the broader context of God's law, and we're going to get into before we get out of this chapter, that's someone else to take care of the mother as she gets older as well. And again, just the joy of motherhood to have someone to take care of, because if her husband doesn't love her anymore, she's got this child that she can love and receive that love back from. So, in verse 11, and if he will not do these three things for her, then she shall go out for nothing without payment of money. That's the question. He forfeits the rights as a master. The deal's broken and she is free. What does that mean for the woman?
She could go glean in the corners of the
Boaz.
Glean in the corners, okay, but she's going to be scraping by too here, isn't she?
Her father sold her.
Her father sold her. Can she go back to her father? God doesn't give us those details here. I would think she'll be able to, but I don't know, because
he used the word redeem.
He did. That makes you almost sound like he gave money back.
It does. Christ redeemed us from our sin.
Yeah.
So I think the father then she could go back to the father. So says.
So says James, not the book of James, not the apostle James, just James.
The other James.
The other James, okay. So does the fact, this is kind of the end of this section, does the fact that God gives laws regarding slavery mean that God condones slavery? Is this a divine appointment of slavery right here, chapter 21? Is God condoning slavery and said slavery's okay, slavery's good, slavery's whatever, fill in the blank?
If it wasn't a fallen world, sinful, sin and messed up, messed up everything good up, we wouldn't have to give this.
Okay. So you're saying he's dealing with broken, fallen humanity.
Yeah.
And so he's putting borders upon their fallenness in regards to how they are to live out this life in this context. Also, let's not forget, this is uncomfortable, I know. Let's not forget that in some ways, in the way that God set this up and told them to do it, these people would be bettering themselves by selling themselves into servitude. We can't wrap our minds around that very good because of what we think of when we think of slavery and how evil and wicked and what they had been through for 430 years too, by the way. God is saying this is a way that someone can better themselves. But here's the rules, the regulations, the stipulations of how it must be done.
I was reading a book once that talks about a young slave and his mother, and he loved her, she loved him, but the master sold her up the river.
Yeah?
Away from him. They couldn't do that here, could they? Could they?
No. No, they couldn't.
So there's no cruelty here, but they are in
the point. I mean, there's no cruelty in the way God lays the law out for it, but there's cruelty in the way that man would carry it out, for sure. But then that person who breaks the law that God has given, even though they think they have this authority over these people, if they break the law, they could be held accountable for it because of breaking the law and the way they're supposed to handle it. Now, we're about to get into murder and capital punishment and all that stuff next week, Lord willing. He gives regulations around it. Does that mean God says murder's okay? No, he's already told them it wasn't okay, right? It's one of the Ten Commandments. But he regulates how to handle that in the next chapter. We're fallen, as Lori was talking about. People murder one another. People enslave one another, so forth, so on. God's providing controls that regulate that. Listen, God, ideally there would be no murder, no theft, no slavery, no assault, no divorce, none of that. God hates all that stuff. But he speaks to it. He's not silent on these matters, which I think we should be grateful for, that he's not silent on these matters. And again, as we said, this is a different kind of slavery than what's ingrained in our minds. We picture, when you think about that, what do you start, what comes to your mind? You have pictures in your mind of movies you've seen of what the slave trade looked like, the ships with the people just packed. We had these horrible pictures that were horrible. That's where we go to instead of going back to what he's saying here, which is a different thing altogether. I may share with y'all before. If not, I'll share it now. And this is just kind of, it's because it's kind of related to what we think of when we think about slavery. A friend of mine that I used to work with, that we did a Bible study with, he went on a mission trip to Africa. He went to a big church in Madison, and they all went on a mission trip over there, and they showed up, and they had a couple of black gentlemen that were with them. And when they showed up, they took them to one of the ports where most of the slaves left Africa. There were only two or three major ports they shipped them from. And one of the black gentlemen with them made a comment to the guy that was leading the trip, and he said, "So this is where the white man came and got my ancestors and brought, put them on ships and loaded them up and sent them over here." And the guide, the African, said, "Nope, no, that's not what happened." He said, "What happened is tribes warred against one another. The victor took the defeated of the other tribe
and sold them
into slavery to the white man." And he said, that guy just, it blew him away. He said, "We're not taught that." He said, "Well, that's what happened."
That's right.
That doesn't vindicate the people who put them on the ships and brought them over.
No.
But he said, it didn't happen exactly like you think it happened either. I mean, even the white guy that was with him, he's like, "I didn't know that. We're not taught that in school."